Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. This is Suzanne, and actually on a sunny September day, and I don't want anybody to start freaking out there because I know we're in September now, and we're going to be going into another season, not right away, but we're going to have some sunny days still left in the Northeast, so we have to sort of like still claim them and sort of like grab them as they come. Just a couple of quick notices that. I do have a couple of events coming up here in September. I think one is sold out. I'm not so sure about the other one, but you can sort of check that out. But I'm going to be in California actually next month. I'm going to be in Palm Desert, which there's a couple things that are sold out, but I think there are also some available. And I'm actually going to be in Vancouver. I haven't been there for a while, and one of those is sold out, but I think I have some. I think I'm doing another one because the other one is sort of sold out. So anyway, check that out. And anyway, the number to call in, guys, is 347-945-7785, and just wanted to do another quick thanks here for a lot of my summer events were slammed, and it was great to meet everybody. And just so you don't know this, Thomas and I will be back in Michigan and Chicago in November, so you could sort of like check that out. So anyway, you know that I always take pride in my guests that I have, and I hope that they always bring enlightenment to many people. And this guest is obviously no stranger to me because I've had her on the show before, and I always like to acknowledge her when she does new, wonderful, quite inventive, experimental, intelligent, all of the above things that go on in her life and in relationship to her work. And of course, I can now officially call her a doctor because she is officially a doctor. But she just came out with a new book, and my guest is, of course, Dr. Terry Daniel. It's called Grief and God, actually, and when it does more harm than healing. And I have to say, it's a really fascinating book. It might take a few of you a little bit to get through it if it's not a language that you're used to reading. But I have to tell you that anybody that has been through church or synagogues or religion and feels the relationship that they had with God went down the tubes when they had an intense loss in their life, or it really deepened them against their relationship with God, and there's a tremendous amount of history in this book. I don't mind telling you, of every theologian and besides theologians, spiritual people that have studied this, psychologists, even stuff about Freud. There's some really, really wonderful things in this book. I would really, and I don't do books that I don't recommend, but I think she did a phenomenal, phenomenal job with this book, and I think we're going to talk a little bit about it. So welcome to the show, Ms. Dr. Terry Daniels.
Thank you, Ms. Medium Suzanne Northrup, and thank you for the great plug on my book. I'm honored that you read it, and I realize that it is somewhat academic, so some people aren't used to reading that style. That's really true.
And I'm one of those. And the thing is that I'm always obviously I try to read all or if not part of every book that I have on my show, for sure, because that's what you're supposed to do when you have people on your show. And but I have to say that yours was, and it's obviously it's very different than most of the books that I have on my show. But knowing you, actually, sometimes there's a cool insight when you know somebody and they've written the book, and you also know what your I know, obviously, at this point, a good point of your journey of how you got to how you started, obviously, publishing and writing, up to where you are now and what you've done, which, by the way, I have a tremendous amount of respect for anybody that's gone back to school and got a PhD is an extremely impressive feat. So I wanted to give you an acknowledgement on that. But separate from that, I just really want to say that I really found the book really, really interesting. And seeing as I'm not, by any ways, a theology buff, and I know, you know, a certain amount of theology, not all of it, but I have to say I really learned a lot, and it was really interesting because I really loved how you sort of tied it all in. So I'm going to let you talk a little bit here, but there's a couple things that I'm going to want to intercede here and ask within it. But I know that you had a most definite reason for writing this book, and I know it has partly to do with your journey. So want to share that. Anybody wants to call in, ask questions to Terry. Later I'll be doing some messages. It's 347-945-7785. So go ahead, Ms. Daniels.
Okay, so I like that when you say theology buff, we call it theology nerds, and it really is part of my journey because when you're looking at stuff, just so much stuff that's related to death and loss, pick one, anything, let's say mediumship, for example, just focusing on that. As you well know, you know, it's for many people, most people, it's very hard to wrap your mind around mediumship without getting tripped up in religious doctrines and rules and dogmas. So that's just the mediumship piece of death and grief. How about death itself? Just coping with death in any form, whether it's an old person dying peacefully in their bed or a traumatic death like a motorcycle accident, always is going to bring up theological questions. Even if you are a diehard atheist who've never had a thought about theology, when something bizarre and coincidental perhaps is, you know, happening, or, you know, your fiance gets killed in the car on the way to the wedding, something extreme like that, you're always going to say, what's up with that? You know, why did that happen? What does that mean? And it does make you start thinking about the universal forces, cosmology, the concept of God, predetermination, blah, blah, all that stuff. So that's why the topic of theology is important when we're talking about grief and loss. And even more so, since you're a medium and that's our context today, when you're talking about mediumship and after-death communication and near-death experiences and deathbed visions and visitations and all that stuff that we deal with at the Afterlife Conference. So that's why it's relevant for your audience and for mine to really take a minute to think about the theology that we were raised with and that we now embrace in whatever form any of us embrace it. And I just like to say that, you know, you can't really deal with questions about mortality and interdimensional communication without bringing theology into the discussion. Mm-hmm. And that's why I pursued theology all these years.
Right, right. So a couple of questions here, because, you know, I'm gonna approach them because I know a lot of the things that you spoke about are certainly things that I deal with all the time in relationship to my work. But one of the things that I found kind of, and you probably know this, but just in case you don't know this, but one of the things that I really, really loved about it was how you know, depending on, of course, our experience as children, which, of course, that's so much where it starts when we're at a young age, whatever our exposure is to either religion or, you know, if we have strict, you know, obviously religious parenting, you know, where all that kind of life starts. And I know you talked about up until the age of like 4 and 6, and how, you know, so much it really settles within children at that time. But I've spoken about this a couple times on my show, but they now know, as far as I understand scientifically, that children can't really differentiate between what we call as real and not real up until the age of about 5 or 6. So, you know, the imaginary friends, we've always said is imaginary, is really not imaginary because we know that, you know, spirits and dead people and stuff visit children because they're very receptive during that period of time. What I thought was, what I liked when I read your book is that you also talked about that age in relationship to if children are raised with, like, for example, you talked about how you know, the dog dies and, you know, and the child says to daddy or mommy, like, you know, where is, you know, Spotty? And so daddy and mommy says, well, Spotty's in heaven. And so sort of like, well, so the child thinks that, you know, up there, so to speak, is where Spotty is. And then, you know, then you have the analysis where Spotty, you know, drops back down to earth, meaning we, of course, see, you know, the dead dog's body. And I'm sure that can be very, in some ways, confusing to a child, depending, again, on, you know, what their prefaces within the family of religion or beliefs or going to church or synagogue or any of that kind of stuff. So I kind of found that section really kind of interesting that you talked about it. So I want to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, that's great. So it's interesting. I'm glad you brought that up because there's two sides to that story. So one side is, you know, psychologists have figured this out a long time ago that there's certain stages of cognitive development. And between about 2 and 6, a kid is not, they take everything literally. So if they see Disney cartoons where lions can talk and sing and dance, right, they think that that's
right.
Real. Lions can talk. And they do have imaginary friends, and they are talking to spirits. That's absolutely true. And that part is fine. The part where it gets to be dangerous is that's also the age when most kids get their initial religious education. That's the age when you start going to Sunday school. And then
that's why I brought that up, because that's very significant.
Yeah, and so then when they start telling you, well, there's this God in the sky and he's watching you and you better be good, and if not, you're going to get punished and go to hell, or even things, I heard someone talking about this the other day. Remember the prayer, now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep.
Yes, of course.
If I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. Well, my parents even taught me how to say that when I was like 5. And how you teach this to a kid, they're like, wait a minute, if I go to sleep, God's going to take my soul? I might die before I wake up? I mean, you got to be really careful telling stuff like this to kids at that age because they do take everything literally. So what happens is if we grow up with that kind of theology as children, we kind of just go forth into our lives without ever thinking about it again. And we just sort of push it in the background and we go through our lives and then we grow up and we never bring it up again for scrutiny, most people, not everyone,
mm-hmm.
until something causes us to question it, like a trauma. And then you're 50 and your child dies and then you're going, what the heck? What does all this mean? That's when you start to question it. And so what you have as a resource is the theology of a 5-year-old trying to grapple with a reality of an adult. And it's very difficult. And so the people who I work with who come to my classes and come to me for counseling, that's what they're struggling with. But I, you know, they say things like, but I thought if I was a good person that nothing bad would ever happen to me. I believed in Jesus and God and I went to church and I prayed that my child would be safe, but he died anyway. And I just always believed that wasn't going to happen because I did what I was supposed to do. That's a 5-year-old talking. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead.
No, so that's kind of what I was also thinking about is that, because I know we've had these conversations before, and it's true, like if I'm a good Christian or I'm a good, you know, and I do all these things, it's supposed to, of course, absolve me from
vulnerability.
Having
pain, supposed to remove pain, your vulnerability.
Yes. But I also liked that within that, I also felt like what was important was that if we didn't have some kind of a, all of us on some level, if we didn't have some kind of a belief system, we would never buy a house if we thought we were going to lose it, or we would never get married, or we would never have children. We would never do that if we felt any of these things are going to happen.
Yes, it's, and I wouldn't call that a
so
belief system
a dichotomy.
So much.
I mean, it's almost like, why would I do this if I think that this is going to happen? So there's
right.
got to be a sort of a fine line somewhere where it's either not in our consciousness or we have some kind of a sense of a hope or faith that that would not be the case.
Well, and it's what we have are assumptions about how the world's supposed to work, right? That's, you know, that whole thing comes from a wonderful book called Shattered Assumptions. And it's true that, you know, we wouldn't go out of our house and go to the grocery store every day if we lived with, you know, the assumption that we're not safe. Of course, it is feeling more and more unsafe to go anywhere these days. But
right.
we have to have that kind of faith. But that's a different thing. You know, that's more like a social construct than a theological one. You know, we have to take risks in order to gain something. We have to get married in order to gain a family or love or a partner. You know, we have to buy a house in order to gain equity and real estate investment. I mean, we have to live.
Right.
You know, so we, so
of course, it's
but and
life.
The assumptions are, the assumptions themselves are not bad.
Right.
Yeah, the assumptions are fine. They're necessary, but we, and this is where Buddhism is so valuable. Buddhism says, yeah, have all those assumptions, but don't be too attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know that. I think the Buddhist parable is, you know, you have this beautiful teacup that you love so much, and you take really good care of it because you want to have it every day. And then one day you drop it on the floor and it breaks, and you don't have it anymore. And so, how do you cope with that loss? You realize that the teacup is already innately broken, and you
mm-hmm.
love it that way. Like, I love this, mm-hmm. even though I know it could go away. It's a different way of looking at attachment.
Got it. So it's interesting that, that you brought that up, because I know that this is true, and you also talked about how that the obviously, you know, we know that there's staunch beliefs in certain, you know, and we know there's extremists in religions and all that, you know, we know that that's true. But I have also heard where you wrote about how that there are certain, you know, Christians that they have found that they really, really like yoga, but they don't want them to think it's really yoga because that would be Hinduism, and they would want to, they wouldn't want to be good Christians because they would want to follow a Hindu belief as opposed to a Christian belief.
Yeah, well, that's really true. I mean, there is some pretty funny stuff in the book about that. I believe it was Pat Robertson, the evangelist, who
right,
said...
Right, it was Pat Robertson. That's what I meant.
Yeah, you know, Christians shouldn't do yoga because it forces them to worship Hindu gods and speak Hindu, which is just ridiculous. And
right.
there's a Christian website, I think it's called Praise Moves, and this woman says, Christians shouldn't do yoga because like Pat Robertson said, it makes you be a Hindu. So I have taken all the yoga postures, the same old ones we always have had in yoga, and I've renamed them after Bible passages. So what used to be called tree pose is now called the crucifixion pose, and what used to be called downward dog is now called sacrificial lamb or something. And so she did all this, but she kept the same poses, which if you do the poses, you are in that ancient, you know, Kundalini energy. So it's just so stupid. I just don't even
right.
get me started.
But
you know it's
what
just ridiculous.
Besides the obvious, what I think is stupid is that it's saying that Hindus have one God, Buddhists have one God, Christians have one God, you know, Jews have one God. It's like we put God into this different categories, meaning that, you know, it's like there's one God. I mean, there's only one source here. How you choose to practice or view it or live your life is another story. You may obviously want to lean in this way, but to go to such—that's to me is extreme. Going to such extremes to try to, you know, make this work for you within your particular religious beliefs. And you know, we've had this conversation where we know that there's obviously there's a lot of, in some, as we know, some of the organizations that you know very well that will not invite mediums in because, of course, they mm-hmm. don't want mediums to be helpful to, of course, their cause. So mm-hmm. you know, they put the damper on it and, you know, said that, you know, it's basically against God. But, you know, I always like to go back now that I have a new person to speak for me is Mr. Buttigieg. He says, well, they're taking up with God because we're all coming from the same source. So I love that he's actually come forth to bring that to terms of his own personal life, his sexuality of
I know. I mean, normally I hate when politicians talk about God, except when it's him.
Yes. But yes, because he brings up in an honest way and he challenges other people. We won't even have to name names and what their belief systems are. So, you know, you either believe we all come from the same source and we are all connected to God, in the umbrella, so to speak, or we're not. So it's just like, you know, mine is better than yours, and that's of course why there's religious wars and everything else. Okay.
Well, you have to realize.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that. We'll do this after the break.
Okay. So again, my guest is Dr. Terry Daniel. The book is called Grief and God. When
religion does more harm than healing.
Thank you. When religion does more harm than good. I have blocks in front of my screen here, so I can't see things. So anyway, this is Suzanne, again with my special guest, Dr. Terry Daniels. We're going to take a quick break. Again, the number to call is 347-945-7785, and we're in Happy September, and we'll be right back in a second.
This is Suzanne's website, www.suzannenorthrup.com, for all the latest news, calendar, and for any events. You can also sign up for her newsletter at www.suzannenorthrup.com. That's SUZANENORTHROP.
Welcome back to Suzanne with my guest, Dr. Terry Daniels. Just real quick update, you know that Terry Daniels is the founder of the Afterlife Awareness Conference, and this year, next year, I would say, we're going to be in Chicago. So put that in your notebook, guys. And so if you're in that area and it's going to be in June, then this is the time to think about it ahead of time. And you can go to Afterlife Conference and find out all the information that you need to do that. And check out Terry's book in the meantime. So, go ahead, Terry.
So you were talking about, you know, there's only one source, like an umbrella. And so, you know, you kind of want to wonder, like, well, why did humanity break up that umbrella into little sub-umbrellas? And there's a reason for that. It's because, you know, everybody's cultural references are different. So if you live in the Amazon, you know, 1,000 years ago, or if you live in China 5,000 years ago, you're going to have very different cultural references for how life works. So you're going to create images of God that fit with your world. So, for example, the Zulu people in Africa believe in reincarnation, and they believe that anyone can come back as an animal, but only a chief can come back as a lion. Well, the people in China 5,000 years ago probably don't think that. And, you know, the people in the Amazon have whole other kinds of ideas of God, because it would have to do with the sun and the rivers and the types of animals that they have in their world. So even though you and I know that there's only one creative, energetic spark in the universe that we call Source or God, when humans come into the picture and start using their minds to think about things, you know, it's that little spark's going to get chopped up into a million pieces. And interesting thing about that is I actually really like polytheism, where there are multiple gods like the Hindus have and like, you know, the ancient Greeks and Romans, because that's, I don't know enough about the Hindu ones, but the Western ones, there was a god of fertility and a god of harvest and a god of war and so on. And those gods are like your inner archetype. So if you're a soldier going to war, to prepare for that, you're going to go to the temple of the god of war and pray and make an offering or whatever. Or if you're getting married and you want to have a baby, you're going to do some sort of interaction with the fertility god or goddess. That makes so much sense to me, because what you're really doing is interacting with that part of your own psyche and strengthening it. Like, all right, I'm going to go to war. I'm going to have to kill people. I might get killed myself. You do that work in the interior self, right? And I like those kinds of gods. So even though it's all under the one umbrella.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So just
an interesting with that, because it's again, like, you know, obviously one of the things you talked about is that if for some reason I have this very strong belief in God, and one of those beliefs is that, you know, I am trying to get pregnant, and so is God punishing me because I can't get pregnant? Or or in one of the cases, you used a woman who had an abortion, and then her daughter died. So she felt that she was being punished for the loss of her daughter because she had that abortion. That's so tied in with what we're talking about, beliefs, but then it has this umbrella of this, that God must have punished me for this, meaning something external outside of us that we don't have any control of, which there's so many things in our lives that we don't have any control of. We can only have control of how we view it, how we deal with it, not necessarily how and what happens in retrospect.
Well, that's why we create an outside entity to hang it on, because we can't comprehend it. So I was just talking to someone about this the other day. Like, imagine you're in a tribe thousands and thousands of years ago, and, you know, you're wondering, like, why did the crops fail? Why did a leopard come into the village and eat my baby? You know, why hasn't it rained in 5 years? These are the questions that you ask when you live in the natural world, and there are no answers to these questions. So you create a mythology that tries to answer them for you, you know, because we're just not comfortable being in the uncertainty of not having an answer for something.
And the interesting thing about
multiple gods is the Judeo-Christian system, which is monotheism, you know, that came in with the ancient Israelites 3,500 years ago. What that was all about was there was this tribe that we know as the Israelites that wanted to be separate from the other people around them who were all pagans, meaning they all worshipped multiple gods like the Greeks and the Romans. And this particular group said, we want to be different than them. We actually want to dominate them. So we're going to make up a god that rules over all of their gods. Our god's going to be on top of theirs, that rules all over everything. That's where the Judeo-Christian God image came from, the creation of monotheism. So along with, now that we have the biggest God that rules above all the other little ones, that God is so powerful, you know, that it can see everything we do, and it behaves exactly like a human. It judges us. It doesn't like it if we have abortions. It doesn't like it if we're gay. You know, it has all these things that it likes and it doesn't like. People just projected all their human foibles onto this. All images of God are made up by somebody, you know, and there's a whole science in, like, how we make up images of God. That's pretty interesting. But it's all made up. So, if a person, you know, bringing it back to grief and mediumship, if a person is struggling with an idea like, my child died because I had an abortion 20 years ago, you know, that person's in a lot of emotional and spiritual trouble.
Conflict.
It's very, very sad. Yeah, and that's complicated grief.
Yes.
I'm sure you hear that all the time.
Sure. I mean, all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, every person who sits across from me, and obviously particularly, if they lose a child. So, it's very hard for, you know, people to go through that kind of, like, intense grief. Like, you know, I give up my life for my child. I can't possibly go on in my life without my child. And, you know, that goes, you know, on and on and on and on. And it's very, very tough. So, you know, obviously my job is to do the best I can at communicating that child to whomever I'm connecting to through, obviously, you know, through validating information that I am actually connecting to that child and what that child, you know, wants. You know, it's interesting because, you know, one of the things that I have to say that invariably happens an awful lot when I'm dealing with children, and there's sort of a theme that they say to me. One of the things that they say is that they get, you know, and I let people know, like, they're not, when I'm saying what they're saying to me, it's not like they're in a different place than we are. So I'm going to use a vernacular that is, if they were here, this is what they would say to you, because I want you to know that they're coming from a different space. But, like, one of the things that they will say is that, you know, my brother or my sister is really upset that we don't celebrate Christmas anymore because I'm not there. And it's like, so my siblings have, quote-unquote, suffered from something that was such a big thing in our family that was taken away. So not only is you know, am I taken away, but, you know, the things that what we did is taken away also. So, but, you know, those become, like, continued different kinds of losses. And I hear that a lot. I hear that a lot from children. Like, you know, and then also sometimes is that, you know, when they're not in a family, when they die, and it's interesting because of what parent it may or may not be, they don't talk about them. The parent can't talk about them. It's commonly very more common, actually, with the fathers than with the mothers. That, you know, they're just so grief-stricken that they can't talk about that son or that daughter anymore. And that's the last thing that we want in this whole scenario, because they're always going to be your daughter or your son, you know, and no matter what happens in that process. It's just that they're not...
Well, what you're describing is what we would call complicated grief. Because there is such a thing as healthy grieving, and a person who gets the appropriate support for their grief, and that would include, you know, good family support, a good theological basis, not a toxic one. Doesn't mean you have to go to grief counseling or anything like that. There's all kinds of forms of support. Is going to realize, of course we still celebrate Christmas. Of course we talk about the child that died.
Right.
People who, you know, shut down their lives very sadly did not have good support and good education with their loss. And very often religion comes into that. Not always, but, you know, religion is one contributing factor.
I can tell you plenty of stories where religion came into it. The person that was, you know, a staunch religious person, and the son is gay, and the son does everything to please the mother and goes through the therapy and whatever it was, and the, you know, the church is saying, like, well, he's a sinner if he's gay, and then the son does everything he possibly can in his power to please his mother, and he can't, so he takes his own life. Then they turn their back on him because now he's really sinned. He was sinning before, but now he's sinned because he's killed himself. So now, and I know I don't know if you know the book Prayers for Bobby. I knew the woman who wrote the book, and that's what happened to her. She was from Iowa, and her son just loved her to death, and he couldn't take it anymore, and he took his own life, and then the church turned on her. So she did everything she could to talk her son into doing it, and then he listened to her, and so then they really turned on her. So she did a whole,
like I said, she wrote a whole book about it. It was a movie actually done that Sigourney Weaver played the mother in it. And anyway, so it was like here she was, you know, she did everything that the church asked her to do to save her son, and they turned on her. So my point is that that even can add a whole other level. So if my son dies of AIDS, or if my daughter dies of an overdose of drugs, and that adds a whole other level of feeling like we couldn't save them, and two, you know, where am I left with all of this? So yes,
there's so many levels.
It's extremely
to that.
Complicated,
I mean,
and very deep stuff. Very deep stuff.
Yeah, and what you're describing is what, you know, is called socially unacceptable death. And
yep.
So, you know, a gay person dying from AIDS or drug overdose would be considered a socially unacceptable death. Also, if your loved one is killed while robbing a liquor store, right, or in a gang shooting, I mean, these are all socially unacceptable deaths. So that's just one of many, many factors that can complicate the grieving process, because you're not going to get the support of your community for that kind of death, right?
Especially,
well, she was a drug addict. What did you expect?
Right.
Well, he was gay. What did you expect? Well, he was a criminal.
Because in a religious community, you literally, not only are you going to be sort of shunned, because you will be, is that you're going against God. I mean, according to what their God is, you know, you have to be a certain kind of a person to, you know. And so I'm constantly asked that one, you know, did my son go to hell?
Right. Oh,
so,
God, it's
and,
so
you know,
sad.
And I try to tactfully say to them, like, no, but your son lived here in hell because.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, good. Good answer.
He lived here in hell. He lived here in hell because he wasn't able to be free to be who he was. And he not only had to have, you know, societal things against him, but he didn't have a support system with his parents who condemned him for his lifestyle.
You know, Suzanne, I'm going to ask you a question now. Turn the interview around, because this is something I talk about a lot, is that our images of the afterlife are, you know, based on, one, what religion tells us, and two, you know, what we hear from near-death experiences. And so the thing about, you know, we'll dismiss the religion ones for the moment. I mean, those actually come from, a lot of them, from people's near-death experience. But from NDEs, what we hear is a description of whatever they experience. They go through a tunnel, they see their loved ones, they see Jesus, they get healed, blah, blah, blah. This is all a very short-term visit to the afterlife. They're in there for a few minutes, but they come back.
Right.
So they really haven't gone all the way in. They've just stepped in the doorway. So that's the closest information we have. The next source of information about the afterlife seems to me should be from mediums. Because as a medium, you're talking to someone who's been over there for 20 years or 5 years or 10 years, not 5 minutes. And so that person would have much more information about what the afterlife is like. Why don't we have that information? I think it's because when people come to a medium, they come to you because they just want a message from that person. They don't really
give a
hoot about.
They want a message from that person. They want to know that person is okay.
And they don't really care about, like, the theology or the cosmology. You know,
no,
I mean, how many people have ever come to you? Yeah, and they never ask you, tell me what the afterlife is like after you've been there for 10 years. No one ever asks you that, right? Well, I would ask you
not
that.
Really.
After we get off this interview,
while,
I'm going to call you and ask you that.
right. But, you know, I wanted to use another example of when we were talking about losses and how people sort of, like, do it. Okay, so I'm sure you've probably had the experience, but I've had the experience a lot in dealing with obviously, people who lose children. And some of them have said to me, like, well, you know, they'll go to this group, and, you know, it's a group of, obviously, parents that have lost children. And people in the group have said, and I can't imagine somebody saying this to somebody who lost a child, well, you got to at least be with your son while he was sick. So therefore, because you went through seeing your son ill, you got to be with him knowing he may possibly die. So that is better than me, where I didn't have a chance to because my son, you know, got killed in a car accident. And people will compare, and you would think, my God, we
both lost children. Does it matter how we lost children? It doesn't matter. It's still lost.
Well, people tend to compare with that, yeah, and I've been in millions of conversations like that, and they compare, but they also quickly realize that it's six of one, half dozen of the other, because people say to me, oh, my God, you know, your son was sick for 7 years. You watched him die for 7 years. That would be much worse than what happened to me, where my son went to school one day and got run over by a car and got killed. I mean, people quickly realize when they're in that conversation how pointless it is. The worst conversation is the one that happens in these support groups for bereaved parents, a group in particular whose name I won't mention, but the same one who doesn't let mediums come there. And they have a very popular phrase that they all repeat to each other all the time, which is, the depth of your pain is equal to the love you feel for your child. Which is a terrible, terrible thing to believe. Because that
Absolutely.
Means you can never let your pain release.
Ever.
You always have to be in that much pain. Because if you stop feeling pain, you don't love your child anymore.
Right. Which, by the way, that's another thing that children, the dead children that I talk to, tell me. That, you know, mommy, I want you to remember what it was when we were having fun and when we had this time. So I'm sure you've heard this story before. But it's worth mentioning again. So the little boy, you know, the little boy is standing at the gates, pearly gates, and he's going to walk in and see God and play with the other children. And so what happens is that, you know, God says to him, you know, why don't you want to come in, you know, and play, you know, play with the other children? And he says, because every time I get near the gates, my mommy's tear blows out my candles.
Oh, you never heard that story, huh? God.
Yeah.
I never heard that before. I mean, but that's also not, you know, I wouldn't say that to a grieving parent either, because a
I
lot
would
of
never
people
say
have
that to a grieving parent either.
The
point is in it is that the message is that, you know, they you know, my job in interpreting what I hear when I pass on, and it doesn't mean they're not going to grieve. It doesn't mean you're not supposed to go through this, because everybody has to go through. I mean, everybody has to go through some kind of grief on some kind of loss. But they also need to understand on some level, or at least hear when they're ready to hear it, how that person, that son, that daughter, that husband, that wife, you know, wants them to, you know, to know that, you know, yes, I'm not with you, but I'm not dead. I'm in a different space. Our connection is very, very different. And when you can't get to a certain point that you're so emboldened in that wall of grief, you're not going to be able to feel me. And so people want to know, like, I want to feel them. And I go, like, the reason you're not feeling them is because your grief is the size of New York City. And until somehow you can break through a certain lot of it, you're not going to feel them, because they want you to feel them. They want you to know that they're around you. And the only way they can do that is by validating information and by having you have a sense of their presence. And the way that we do that is that somehow we break through that so that we know when they're – like, you know when you get messages from your son. So, you know, I'm sometimes maybe clearer than other times, but you have no doubt in your mind that you've had that contact. So that is very, very wonderfully healing when we are able to do that. I mean, of course, you know, I mean, the thing is that, you know, that's partly, you know, when we have some kind of beliefs of going to mediums. But I have to tell you, a lot of people that I talk to get messages. Now, that doesn't mean they're not grief-stricken, and it doesn't mean they still don't want their son or their daughter to be here. But there's something about them being able to get the messages that does in a lot of ways really help them.
Right, and a lot of people misunderstand how that works, because another misconception people have is that their grief can hold their loved one back from progressing through the realms of the afterlife. And that's a misunderstanding of what you just described. What you just described is that your grief is holding you back. It's not holding them back. That little kid can still go and play with the other children in heaven.
That's right.
You know, he can do whatever he wants. But your grief is keeping you from seeing him playing with those children, right?
Right. So keep that thought in mind.
No matter what I do with my grief, I can have the worst complicated unattended grief in the world. My loved one is still going to be going forward doing whatever he's doing in heaven.
Right. And
you're
not
going to stop
doing
and
anything.
Notice my sadness? Sometimes, probably,
right.
But it's not going to stop him.
Right. And also, you know, the other misnomer is that, well, if I connect to them, does that mean, yeah, number one, that I'm holding them back or that I shouldn't connect to them or that's a bad thing? But we'll talk about that thought in a minute. Again, the number to call, guys, is 347-945-7785. We'll be back in a minute. And again, my special guest is Dr. Terry Daniels, and the book is Grief in God, When Religion Hurts More Than Healing.
There's more harm than healing.
More harm than healing. I get this black thing in front of me so I can't sing, and we'll be right back in a moment.
This is Suzanne's website, www.suzannenorthrup.com, for all the latest news, calendar, and for any events. You can also sign up for her newsletter at www.suzannenorthrup.com. That's SUZANENORTHROP.
Welcome back. This is Suzanne with my special guest, Dr. Terry Daniels, and we're really getting into some real good theosophical, whatever, conversation here. And this is really, really good. Just a real quick update for you guys is that I'm not positive. I may have one or two spots left in my September group, and I'm also going to be in New York City in September, so you can check that out and contact, of course, my office, and I still have some apartments available, so you can sort of check out. In October, I will be out in California, and I'll be in Palm Desert, and I'll be in L.A., I may even be in San Diego, so that, of course, all that stuff is as well on my website. So, and then, of course, we're talking about the AFLAB conference, which is going to be next year in Chicago, and with Terry, and check that out because that's in June. Am I correct? I'm in the first weekend in June again?
June 4th through 7th.
Yeah, the first weekend in June. Okay, good. Very, very good. Okay, so so you were saying, let's go back to the thought that you were talking
about.
Well,
we were talking about the misconception that our grief holds our loved ones back in the afterlife. And,
right.
I personally don't know the answer to that. I know it doesn't hold people back, but I know that they're aware of our suffering and our pain. And I know that they want to say to us, there's no reason for this kind of suffering because I'm not suffering and everything happened as it should. And, you know, it's fine the way it is. I'm right where I'm supposed to be and
right.
blah, blah, blah.
But you're also saying when you say that, you're saying you have control of another person. You have control
right.
of another person's fate. You have a control of another person's destiny. You have a control of why that person, you know, because a lot of times somebody will say to me, like, well, you know, do I believe in accidents? And I say, no, I don't believe in accidents, even when they're accidents, because the universe doesn't kind of work that way. And we will never know why that person, for whatever reason, is not physically here anymore. Whatever reason
right.
why they passed, whether it's the age of 3 or the age of 83, you know, our path, our individual journeys is our own division. It's our soul program, period. And so
That's exactly
if you're
right.
tied
yeah.
in with somebody in that soul program, then you're part of whatever that journey means. And it's not an accident. And we don't know why somebody chose it. But I will tell you this, I have learned, is that
And I'm not saying all this time, but I can tell you that there's a good percentage of that somebody will come in and through love will put us in a very painful situation in our life to learn, because that's what our soul needs to learn at that time. So, you know, and the thing is that by not somewhere embracing that process, you know, you're missing the part of why you're part of this whole thing, because we're all interconnected in some way. It isn't, this isn't by, you know, random acts of whatever. So that's a whole kind of process.
So you bring up a good point, you know, about control. We will never know what that person's soul plan is, but there
exactly.
is, they do have some sort of soul plan.
Absolutely.
Of which this
just
death
like everybody
was a part.
On this earth does.
Right, and it's none of our business in a way. And that's, you know, that gets into the part of grief where it's like really, it's like all about me, my pain. I want to know
right.
what this person
right.
is doing and what they had in mind and how can they plan this without me. And, you know,
right.
it's all about me and my needs. And I know that sounds like a terrible thing to say. But grief is kind
well,
of like
it's,
that.
It's truth. It's truth. I mean, you know, they say the truth will set you free on some level. And the thing is that you're absolutely right. It's just like, you know, the one of the things you always said, like, well, what makes us think that I'm not supposed to lose a child, or I'm not supposed to lose, you know, I mean, I know all kinds
yeah.
of losses. I mean, people that are getting ready to get married and you know, their spouse dies. Can you imagine? I mean, that's very extremely intense. Extremely intense. So, you know, I'm, and
yeah.
even on another level, you know, I have a friend that he's a character and he also happens to be an atheist, but he is having a tremendous difficulty aging, and it's just like, you know, I say, Danny, you got to embrace it, because there's not a whole hell of a lot you can do about this. you got to embrace it. But he just like he's just not. You know, I mean, I know there's some people who just do not age well, and it's sort of like, well, there ain't a whole lot you can do, but you can embrace it and try to do the best you can and try to live your life the best you can and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. There's some things we have no control over. Oh, we just have
to
control.
Well, and it'd be interesting to look at that guy's situation, like what is, you know, what's the fear underlying that? You know, did he have a parent who had a really terrible, you know, old age illness? I mean, there's something there, or past life thing.
Oh, he's
maybe.
Got some stuff. He
yeah.
definitely has some baggage. Trust me on that one. So,
yeah.
Yes, he most definitely has that. That's for sure. That is for sure. So
yeah,
but,
well, it's
all, you know.
It's always that. But you know, it's the thing about this people's because, and this is our cultural thing too, because we are in this Judeo-Christian culture, where there's heaven and hell and punishment and the sins of the father and all these ideas, that makes everybody's grief more difficult because, like you said, it's like, this isn't supposed to happen to me. I'm a good person. My kid wasn't supposed to die. I have
right.
control of this. I want to know if there's a reason for it. And the
right.
logical
the
reason,
right
it's not logical,
life.
That
I
people
did all the
just
right
jump
things
to.
In my life, you know?
Yeah,
I want
and you're always looking for a reason, and so punishment seems as good a reason as any, I guess,
yep.
you know, because
yeah,
our culture gives that to us as a possibility, more than a possibility, a likelihood. It's very sad, but the good news is that religious culture in America is changing rapidly, and if you look
oh,
at the
sure
statistics,
is.
Yeah, if you look at the Pew, P-E-W, polls and
right.
surveys on religion.
Polls, yes.
I don't know the exact numbers. It's in my book, but just, you know, something like millennials, like 92% of millennials do not affiliate it with any religious tradition, something like that, huge numbers. So,
right.
and it's definitely changing. It's in need of an overhaul, and the overhaul is in progress. So that's really good news. We're very happy to hear that.
Yes. And also the other thing is that, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, but besides me knowing this, you also know this also very, very well from your work, is that, you know, besides all these other things, is that we really don't know how to, you know, like, we're supposed to act a certain way when somebody dies. And it's like,
right.
it doesn't work that way. You know, if you want to scream and yell and shout and get drunk and whatever, is go do it, because... You know, you can't keep this inside. It's painful, and you've got to sometimes.
whole thing that we're supposed to be stoic, and you're not supposed to do. One of my favorite movies is the favorite line, and I'm sure you know this as well as I do. It's the movie Ordinary People.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, their son, of course, dies, and so anyway, so they're getting ready to go to the funeral, and Mary Tyler Moore says to Sutherland that anyway they get home, and he says to her, he says, like, I was going to my son's funeral, and you were wondering that my socks didn't match.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Because that's who she was.
Yeah.
She had this image to the world, you know, and even on her son's death, she was going to keep that image to the world. It's like, really? For what reason? I mean, for what reason would you possibly? And that was another one. It was like, you know, that one, that, you know, the son died. You know, I'm sure you know the story, right? You know, the brothers
absolutely.
Were together. Right. And so, and then finally, after all those, you know, him trying to kill himself for all those years, finally, you know, he got, when the therapist said to him, the only thing you did wrong was you held on. Your brother didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So you're punished the rest of your life because you hung on. So,
yeah,
well,
God,
you know,
that's right.
That and the scenes of the socks, well, those are two scenes, of course, you know, I will never forget, even though that movie was like 40
and
years ago.
And I encounter families like that all the time.
I do, too.
You know, and another important thing that movie shows us is how different men and women grieve.
Deal with things.
And, again, a big part of this is the cultural references, the way that, you know, we're taught in our culture, where if you were looking at a family in Africa, they'd be screaming and crying and singing,
yes,
and jumping, you know, and expressing everything. So one thing that's really
normal.
Great about... Yeah,
I see that as normal.
Well, that's
right.
That's healthy. It's normal for Africa. It's not normal for Iowa, you know?
Right.
I mean, we're
right.
creating these different normals. But what another great thing that's happening as religious thought progresses is we're, because of the Internet, because we have so much exposure to other cultures now that we didn't have when we were kids, we're learning how the Africans do it and how the Gypsies do it and how the Ukrainians do it, you know? So we're bringing those other cultural.
And that's a good part of technology.
That's a good part of technology.
So,
yeah, it's giving us exposure to things that we would not otherwise have. So we're very thankful for that, indeed.
That part is very, very good. So we have about 2 seconds left here in the show, and
okay.
So you tell me what you want to do for the last. Two seconds.
The last
of,
2 seconds. I'll pitch the book. It's called "Grief and God: When Religion Does More Harm Than Healing." You can find it on Amazon. You can go to the Afterlife Conference website, which is afterlifeconference.com, and click on the subscribe link there and join my email list. And of course, we want you to come to the Afterlife Conference. That's what all this work is for. That's what the book is for. That's what I went to school for. It's all about supporting the Afterlife Conference, because it was the first one of its kind. It's lasted the longest. We're very proud of it. And Suzanne is our resident.
You do great stuff, and I constantly promote it, because you're right. There's nothing like it. And I will tell you that I get phenomenal, you know, accolades so many times from going there, and people that have met me there. So it's been real wonderful, and it really is a phenomenal source for healing, because you know when you're in this situation, and God knows there's, you know, many of these people that go to the conference. It doesn't, you know, it's not a magic wand, but you know what, you don't feel like you're alone, and you've got somebody else that you can really count on. So
yeah,
go buy the book. It's on Amazon, and Terry also has a really great, you know, monthly newsletter, and you can check that out on it as well. So without further ado, this is Suzanne. Have a great fall coming up here, but, you know, don't let it go yet. It's only September. We're still in it. So we can sort of enjoy that while we can, to have a nice little toad, even though the things are changing in the sky, in the trees, we'll kind of like keep them
going on here. Again, this is Suzanne Northrup with my special guest, Dr. Terry Daniel. And as always, I hope that everything you want may be yours.